gotta tell you, Dan, happy to hear that music.
That's your jam.
That's my jam. Yeah, today is Tuesday. We're back on Tuesday. Tuesday is the day for politics here on the Common Good podcast. I'm Rob Ryersey alongside Dan Dietrich, and we're here to talk some politics with you today, to talk about news of the day and to think about that news from it, you know, its implications for our political system, and also you know, what it means in light of goodness and common goodness in the world. We're back on Tuesday because the We the People ride is done.
It's done.
It is finished. Dan, you were crossing the finish line.
Yeah.
A little over a week ago, huh?
Yeah. Flew down there and joined up with the ride in Florida and did the last, 85, 90 miles. And rode those bikes right into the ocean.
Nice. That's fantastic. I'm sure that when our fearless leader, Doug Padgett, is back, which I probably will be next week, we'll have a lot to talk about and hear the stories that have been collected from that experience, and really kind of an amazing thing and a really kind of wonderful thing. Well, Dan, today we're gonna talk some politics. There's stuff going on in the world. It's a holiday.
Plenty to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah, the news isn't taking a holiday. So let's jump into it. Dan, what do you got for us today?
Well, you know, the holiday weekend's coming up, and with all the travel, everyone's worried about gas prices. They've been going up. And what are the gas prices where you live right now?
You know, we're in the low threes right now. I think 309, something like that.
Yeah, I'm like 318 I saw today. But like a week ago, it was like high threes. And you see in like San Francisco where it's like $5 a gallon. It's crazy depending on where you live. But Biden is attempting to do something about it. He just tapped the oil reserves, trying to bring down those gas prices. And what do you think about, you know, this use of presidential power to influence gas prices here? Is there any reason that Republicans can be mad about this?
Oh, absolutely. It's something Joe Biden did, so of course Republicans are going to be mad about it. So, you know, gas prices are an interesting thing to me for a number of reasons. You know, one, I just always find it amusing that, like, the people who will drive all over town to get, you know, gas that's 3 cents cheaper. And then, you know, you think, how many gallons of gas can you put in your gas tank? 15? So you just ran all over town to save 45 cents? You know, it's just, come on. Yeah. Like, gas prices is one of those things that people obsess about. And even when it doesn't always make a lot of sense. And something that I don't think makes a lot of sense is the way in which gas prices affect presidential approval. For whatever reason, if gas prices are down, people think, oh, the president's doing a good job. Mm-hmm. And if gas prices are up, people think, oh, you know, there's something going on with the president. You know, he's failing. And with this inflation narrative that has come out lately, and we keep hearing every, you know, inflation, 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 inflation. It seems to be like the mantra that that the news media is glommed onto, which really makes me want to have a conversation with our friend Fadel Kaboob about inflation, and maybe we'll try to make that happen real soon. But I think, like, part of me thinks, oh yeah, well, inflation, like the price of everything is up a little bit right now. And I think, you know, gas prices fluctuate. I remember, you know, I retired from pastoral ministry this past Sunday, just a couple days ago. And so I was doing a little bit of a retrospective from 2006, because that was the year we started our church. And so I was, you know, thinking about everything that happened in 2006, and, you know, Pluto not being a planet anymore, or, you know, Twitter being born, you know, all this kind of stuff. And one of the things, as I was kind of doing this research about everything that happened in 2006, 15 years ago, one of the things I noticed was that gas prices in 2006 were $3.03. was the national average. So my gas prices now, 15 years later, are $3.09. You know, it's like, yeah. Come on. Like, this is like, come on. But everybody's freaking out about it. And so, you know, this is not something new. The president tapping oil reserves to try to bring down prices. It's a supply and demand thing. You increase supply, it's going to, you know, it's going to bring down prices. I don't know. It's one of those, it's one of those things I don't care very much about, but I do understand that there's political implications. I tend to think that there are bigger forces at play than anything that the president could have an impact on with the oil reserves, everything from, you know, oil companies and, you know, what they're doing in terms of environmental impact and, you know, the hurricane season and what that has done to oil refineries. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got, you know, instability in the Middle East where so much of the oil is pumped out of the ground. I mean, there's so many different factors that go into it. I don't think I'm not sure that, you know, tapping the oil reserves is going to make that much of a difference. Hopefully it does, you know, because I'm rooting for Joe Biden, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But if it comes down, you know, say it comes down 5 cents a gallon, you know, great. You just save 75 cents.
Right. It does seem like one of those things where if it's bad, the president takes the hit. And if it's good, it was other factors that brought the prices down. But Joe Biden's trying to get some things done. You know, they passed the infrastructure bill, which was big. Still working on this Build Back Better bill. So many B's.
No, it's just the worst. I mean, listen, I mean, just from a marketing perspective, it's just the worst slogan ever. It's just awful. And, you know, what's really interesting to me now, though, is that, you know, the progressives in Congress, you know, the so-called squad with AOC and Cori Bush and Jamal Bowman and Rashida Tlaib and others that are part of that group, you know, they've really adopted the Build Back Better agenda as their own and saying, hey, we're trying to defend the president's agenda. We're trying to push what the president wants. And they're becoming like the standard bearers of this idea of Build Back Better. And, you know, with the infrastructure bill being passed, these squad members voted against the infrastructure bill because they had been promised by Nancy Pelosi that these two bills would go together and they'd have the chance to vote on the Build Back Better Act before the infrastructure bill. And since Nancy Pelosi broke her promise, they voted against the bill. Doesn't mean that they were against it. They're not. They actually, you know, were all very much for it, but there was an agreement in place about these two bills going together. Mm-hmm. Now that the infrastructure bill is passed, thankfully, you know, Nancy Pelosi and the folks in the House are passing the Build Back Better Act, and it's going to head to the Senate now. And, you know, hopefully we're going to see some pretty significant progress here on the president's agenda that's going to make a difference in people's lives, as opposed to, you know, regardless of what Republicans say. I was looking for the story. I couldn't find it before we got started. But I heard a couple days ago there was a Republican congressman, and it slips my mind now who was complaining that the infrastructure bill had not made any difference in people's lives. Just like, come on, guy. Like, you know, the president signed it 3 days ago, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time.
Nope, it's not working.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing any results.
Immediate failure. It's just ridiculous.
But, I am, you know, curious, all these Republicans that voted against it, like, how are they going to play this when really good things happen for their states and communities? Like,
yeah,
they're
gonna
against
show up
all of it.
Yeah, they're going to show up at the ribbon cuttings. And, you know, and glad hand, and hopefully, you know, hope that people have short memories. That's, you know, now, you know, I live here in Arkansas where all four of our Congress people voted against it. Both of our senators voted against the infrastructure bill. So we were, you know, an 0-6. And Arkansas stands to get $5 billion in money to help our roads and other infrastructure, which we desperately need as a state. And so, you know, I don't want to see, you know, Steve Womack, my congressman, showing up at a ribbon cutting, taking credit for this thing because, you know, they don't deserve it. And but I'm sure they will because they'll be taking credit now. But it's important to remember there were a number of Republicans. I think the number was 16 who voted in favor of this, and it really truly was a bipartisan infrastructure bill, which is a great victory for the president. You know, after Donald Trump, you know, every month or so would trot out the idea of infrastructure week. Joe Biden actually got this thing done. It took a lot longer than any of us wanted. It was super frustrating. We all learned Kristen Sinema's name and, and you know, as a result of all of this.
Joe Manchin.
But the reality is that, you know, we've got some good stuff. It's not perfect. Neither of these bills are perfect. They, you know, the Build Back Better Act contains huge tax cuts for the rich, which is super frustrating for some of us. But you know, the president is having some success, which is so important because I've worried, as I've said on this podcast, I've worried that he's going to be labeled as someone who can't get stuff done.
Yeah.
That he's got the best of intentions, but he can't execute. And and so it's really good to see, you know, some execution taking place.
Now it's moving on to the Senate. We need all 50 Democratic senators to be on board with this. How likely is that to happen?
You know, I think it's probably likely. There will be, you know, deals made, and you know what ultimately gets passed won't be, you know, what many of us would want it to be. I didn't follow the story, but I saw a headline, which is really not the way to, you know, follow the news, just reading headlines. But there was something about Chuck Schumer complaining about the parliamentarian. Like, come on, like, don't let the parliamentarian derail the Build Back Better Act. You know, so I think it's probably going to happen. It's going to be watered down. It's not going to be as aggressive as I would like. Mm-hmm. And that's, frankly, I think that's going to mitigate some of the impact of it, which is going to hurt the president in terms of getting credit for a positive impact. However, I tend to think, you know, the economy in particular is, it's like a big ship that takes a long time to turn. And I think we've got this tendency where one president gets blamed for something that was actually the impact of the previous president's policies,
right.
and the next president gets credit for something that was actually the impact of the previous president's policies because it takes so long for this stuff to have an impact because our economy is so big. But hopefully. You know, we're going to see some good wins for the president here.
Yeah, it's sort of like that constant debate over the debt ceiling. It's like, no, this is money that we approved years ago, and we just have to pay the bill. It's not like Joe Biden came in and initiated a bunch of new spending that now we have to raise the debt. No, this is Republican administrations.
Yeah, and I think probably Fadel Kaboob, our resident economics professor here for the Common Good podcast, would probably tell us that the debt ceiling is all kabuki theater and it's like, it's just, you know, like it's all political gamesmanship, which means nothing at all.
Yep.
But, you know, like, so there's been Republican, like I mentioned, there are some Republicans that have supported the president's agenda, particularly in the infrastructure bill. And that has turned some Republican voters, some, you know, Trump supporters in particular, against these Republican congresspeople. And Fred Upton in Michigan is particularly getting hit with this. He released on MSNBC, released a voicemail of that was received by Congressman Fred Upton from his office. And, you know, this is probably a good evangelical church going,
right? Good, you know, God fearing Christian man.
A youth pastor or so, you know, like, but for, you know, those that are listening on the podcast, we've got, I'll read this for you. F traitor. That's what you are. You're a effing piece of S traitor. I hope you die. I hope everyone in your effing family dies, you effing piece of S trash mother effer. Voted for dumb A effing Biden. You appreciating this work here I'm doing, Dan?
It's impressive.
I'm just waiting for me to slip up and then, you know, this podcast to get an explicit label on iTunes. You're stupider than he is, and he can't even complete effing sentence, you dumb mother effer effing traitor, piece of S mother effer piece of trash. I hope you effing die. I hope your effing family dies. Gosh. I hope everyone in your effing staff dies.
I'm laughing, but it's just completely insane and terrifying at the same time.
Okay. So, Dan, you and I both have at times been out in public giving some criticism to the conservative and Republican loyalty of evangelical Christianity. You put out a song that went viral called Hymn for the 81%, which is amazing. I wrote a couple of pieces for Time.com. And urging evangelicals to vote for whoever the Democratic nominee was. How big of a backlash did you get for that? Did you get voicemails? Did you get emails? Did you get messages like this? Have you been on the receiving end of this?
So many, like hundreds and hundreds of crazy messages and texts and death threats, arson threats, just like that one. Like,
yep.
Maybe not as eloquent, but...
Yes, I have too. And typically they would start with, you know, I'm a follower of Jesus and I read your piece. And by the end, it was, you know, expletive, 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 I hope you die.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like not exaggerating. Like, that's what these messages are like. And, you know, I'm really glad that Fred Upton's office released this because, it shines the light on the complete and utter incivility of, you know, the people that try to claim that they've got the moral high ground. And, I'm really glad that, that Fred Upton's office is showing what, you know, what it's like when you're out there publicly doing something that is, heresy, that is against the, you know, accepted orthodoxy of a particular group. We've both been on the receiving end of this, and it's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not fun to experience. I feel badly for his staff, but this is the reality out there. Mm-hmm. It's scary. Like January 6th doesn't come as a surprise because it's the same people who send these kinds of messages are the ones who will, you know, storm the Capitol or plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan or, right. you know, like, ah, it's really disconcerting.
Yeah. And just the marriage of this level of hatred and violent rhetoric with Christianity, with white evangelicalism. Yep. Like, yep. They're so intertwined. And if you're doing this for God, you get a pass on all the other things Jesus said about loving your enemies. So
yes. Yes. Precisely. And, you know, and included in this, I wish I could just say, okay, these are just fringe. This is just some, you know, crazy person in his mom's basement. The reality is like this kind of stuff is everywhere, including within the halls of Congress itself.
Yeah.
You want to talk about Paul Gosar?
Not really, but we're going to. So here's a member of Congress who tweets and retweets several times. I haven't watched it, but a graphic anime video showing him attacking Representative Ocasio-Cortez and sort of joking. It's always a joke in hindsight when they're called out for it. It's a joke. But to use violent imagery against a fellow member of Congress, that seems like a basic thing that everyone should be against. And surprisingly... in this case, he was censured, which is, I guess, sort of like a slap on the wrist for a congressperson. But again, it just gets back to like this violent rhetoric and imagery gets ramped up and then people take it too far in real life and you get a January 6th insurrection.
Yeah. Yeah, and this along with the censure comes Representative Gosar being removed from all of his committee assignments. So he's the second Trump supporting Republican congressperson in this Congress to be removed from committee assignments, which is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Listen, this is one that really, like, I honestly can't think about this one too much because it will really mess with me. As some folks might know, I know Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez. You know, when she was running for Congress, she and I were both recruited by an organization called Brand New Congress, and we attended what my wife lovingly dubbed Congress Camp together. And Alex, which is, you know, what I call her, before she was AOC, Alex and I were sitting next to each other at a table when we signed the paperwork to launch our campaigns. And she's a friend. And so this really, really bothers me. It bothers me because I know that on January 6th, she was literally scared for her life. Mm-hmm. Because people like Representative Gossard have given permission to, the masses out there to objectify, threaten bodily harm against a congresswoman. And it is absolutely reprehensible. And the anger within me over this runs really, really deep. And if I if I tap into it, I'm afraid I will, I will rage about this for the next several days, which I don't want to do because Congress is dumb for a couple of reasons. One, because Alex can stand up for herself. Thank you very much. She doesn't need I think it's wonderful that you know, her colleagues in the House supported her and came to her defense. But I have complete confidence in her ability to stand up for herself and to hold her own in any kind of conflict with Congressman Gossard. Anybody that's ever tried to go after her on Twitter knows that she will clap back and you will lose that fight.
Yeah.
Because she's just great. You know, but at the same time, while I have every confidence in her, like, this is one of those things that is just really, really bothersome. Mm-hmm. And any kind of punishment that comes Representative Gossard's way is completely appropriate. And, you know, I think this is the type of thing that, you know, should be expellable. Oh, from totally. The House of Representatives.
Yeah. I've seen some commentary like, if this happened at any other job, like if you worked at
workplace.
A Best Buy and you made a video like this and retweeted it, you would be gone instantly. Like, yep. No questions asked, no severance, no parachute. Like, you're gone. Yep. But in Congress, you can violently threaten your colleagues and just lose a committee assignment.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Take us to the next topic, Dan, because
it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Oh, great.
You might be sensing a theme here. Corey Bush, another friend of yours, said, yeah. Just being real. This is a tweet from Corey Bush. She said, just being real. Every day it feels more and more dangerous coming to work. Not only do these members fuel violence, now they're actively recruiting someone whose sole qualification is killing people, standing up for Black lives, and getting away with it. She's, of course, referencing the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. She says they must be expelled. Because here again, we have a tweet from our friend Paul Gossard saying, justice was served for Kyle Rittenhouse, and I will arm wrestle Matt Gaetz to get dibs for Kyle as an intern. So these Congress people are fighting over themselves to see who can recruit the person that was just exonerated for killing people in the street.
And Madison Cawthorn also posted a video about how he wanted Kyle Rittenhouse to be an intern for him as well. Corey is Corey's the best. Corey's just amazing, and she's right on the money. You know, mm-hmm. she's absolutely correct that you think about, like, the climate that is being created in the House of Representatives for women of color. It is, you know, by these white guys who are, you know, jumping over each other to, you know, try to establish their machoism, and And there are real world consequences for this, where people are actually get hurt, actually get killed because of this rhetoric and how it stokes violence and fuels the fanaticism of people. And I mean, the Rittenhouse verdict was not a surprise, right? Like, if you watched any of that, if you followed any of it, you saw the behavior of the judge.
Just and, wild, yeah.
And which was, I mean, you've never seen anything. Judge Judy doesn't act like that. and, you know, you just think like, ugh, this is a kangaroo court. And it, you know, turned out to be that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, now we're going to see the, you know, juries are deliberating now. The jury's deliberating now in the case against the three men who murdered Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia. And, you know, if I fear that if that verdict goes, you know, what I think is the wrong way, you know, I fear, you know, what kind of impact that's going to have and what implications that will have. But, mm-hmm. you know, what Corey is expressing here is that, man, this stuff has consequences. And like, and there are real people at danger, in danger as a result of, you know, these, you know, Matt Gaetz and Paul Gossard and Madison Cawthorn, like, you know, frat boying it up. And, yeah.
And they want to give this kid a position of power and influence and welcome him into the halls of Congress alongside their colleagues that are receiving violent death threats.
But, I mean, these are the same people who welcomed in the insurrectionists on January 6th. So, you know, why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
You know, it just makes sense. It's completely on brand for these folks.
Yeah. Speaking of January 6th. The gift that keeps on giving.
These two. Oh,
as you are fond of saying,
examples of wit and wisdom.
As you were saying, over here at the Common Good Podcast, we are not over what happened on January 6th, and the January 6th panel isn't over it either. And so they just issued subpoenas to Roger Stone and Alex Jones. Where do you think this is going, Rob? Is this anything going to come of this, or is this?
I mean, I think, you know, the president's strategy, or the former president, that former guy, the twice impeached, completely repudiated by the American public, former president, one term loser of a president. his strategy and the strategy of his allies is to punt, is to try to run out the clock. To, you know, take as much time as possible to delay in hopes that they can get to November and Republicans take the House back and all of this goes away. Now, if Democrats, and not just Democrats, because it's a bipartisan January 6th commission, thank you very much. You know, if these members of Congress that are seeking to hold people accountable for their role in the insurrection of January 6th, if they're able to move fast enough, then I think it's really good, you know, because we need justice in this situation. But, you know, what's that old saying that the wheels of justice turn slowly? And that, frankly, benefits Donald Trump and his allies and these people in Congress who either collaborated with or encouraged or incited the insurrectionists. They want to run the clock out until November and, you know, Roger Stone and Alex Jones are not going to cooperate with the January 6th commission. They're going to punt. They're going to try to, you know, be in sync with the former president's strategy and try to run this thing out in hopes of, you know, everybody getting off scot-free. And frankly, that's probably what's going to happen. as frustrating as that is, that's probably what's going to happen. What do you think, Dan?
I'm not holding my breath, I guess. They do seem to be really good at just ignoring subpoenas and calls to do anything. And they're just going to wait it out. And I just don't have a lot of confidence in the justice system, let alone Congress, you know, checking itself and this panel. I don't know that it has any teeth.
Do we have any happy news, Dan? Is there anything good happening in the world?
Well, Thanksgiving is coming up. And you know, depending on the fairy tales you were told as a kid, it's a really happy, wonderful holiday.
Okay, listen, I have completely deconstructed, you know, my understanding of what Thanksgiving is all about, have a completely different perspective about it. And at the same time, it's the best meal of the year. I mean, Thanksgiving is one of probably my favorite holiday. It's going to be very different in our house this year. My two eldest children are not coming home. And so this will be the first Thanksgiving we ever have without our family. So my two eldest children are going to be in New York City, together celebrating Thanksgiving there. Then my next child is, been invited to her boyfriend's grandparents' house to celebrate Thanksgiving there.
Big step.
So, you know, I keep saying to Vanessa, my wife, you know, we've got a 7-year-old. I'm like, at this rate, like, I'm afraid I'm going to get a rotisserie chicken from Walmart as like for Thanksgiving this year. And I'm not okay with that because I love it. But it is a super stressful holiday. Not just because, you know, it is a flashpoint for deconstruction, but it's also, you know, brings about the opportunity for all sorts of family conflict, not just the normal stuff, but the political stuff too, right? Yeah. Like that, like you're sitting around the table with, you know, your dad, your mom, your uncle, you know, your conservative cousin, and, you know, what are we going to talk about? What are we going to say? Yeah. How is this going to go?
Yeah. So what's your, you know, it sounds like you're going to have a smaller than normal gathering, but
my go-to move is don't get together with those family members.
Just avoid that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But quick, what do you do?
Call, say happy Thanksgiving. Yeah.
A little FaceTime. Quick, see you later. What do you do if you're in a position where, it's a bigger gathering and the unavoidable political talk comes up? Any recommendations from a former pastor here?
Yeah.
How to navigate that?
Yeah. You know, I think there's two things that are really important: boldness and grace. And typically, most people that I've known over the years, struggle with one or the other of those. There's some people that, you know, like they're too scared to speak up and they need more boldness. And then there's some people that really need to sprinkle some grace in with their diatribe. Mm-hmm. And I think probably very few of us, you know, need both of those things, but I think that's what we need. We need boldness and grace. And, you know, there's this wonderful passage in the Bible that talks about Jesus in John chapter 1. Where John describes Jesus as being full of grace and truth. And that's, you know, that's what I'm talking about. There's this, these two things in balance, these two things in harmony. You've got family members that are completely and utterly wrong. And, you know, you can tell them the truth, but you also need to do it in such a way of realizing that you're probably not going to convince them in that conversation. So you got to be gracious with them. And the other thing I think about is trying to kind of remember the way that you have changed and grown over the years.
Yeah.
And what has made a difference in your life. Was it ever being yelled at? Did that ever change you?
Did that work? Yeah.
It didn't. You know, Paul says in the book of Romans that it's God's kindness that brings us to repentance. It's not judgment. It's not conflict. It's kindness that brings us, you know, that brings about change in our lives. And, you know, I fully believe that. You know, I always think about the scene from Les Miserables where Jean Valjean, steals, some silver from a priest. And he gets caught and he's brought back, and the priest says, "Oh, Jean Valjean, I'm so glad that you got brought back by the police because you forgot to take the rest of it."
Right.
And he kind of whispers in his ear, like use this to change you and to be a better man. And it is like it wasn't getting caught. It wasn't the threat of punishment. It wasn't, you know, coming down hard on him that was going to change Jean Valjean's life. It was his experience of grace and mercy and forgiveness and kindness. So that would be my advice, is like, be bold and be kind.
Yeah. And I like that reminder to remember where you've come from and how far you've come. For those of us who, you know, grew up more conservative, more Republican, and now find ourselves on the more liberal, progressive, whatever label you want to put on it, end of the spectrum, we haven't always been here. We haven't always been right. There's a good chance we're not right about everything right now. And so to hold that in mind as we're having these conversations, I think is a really good reminder. I think for me, you know, it used to be like, don't talk politics. But what you meant about politics back then was like taxes and like, you know, legislature. And now it seems like politics is so all-encompassing that when you say don't talk politics, it can also mean don't talk about anything in the news because it has political implications. I think for me, I'm fine avoiding politics in the old sense. But when it comes to people talking about how others are treated, that's where I feel the need to say something. And Jackie Lewis, she's the Reverend Dr. Jackie Lewis. We had her on the show a couple weeks ago. But she offered up this helpful tweet. She says, "Hi, nice white people. The truest test of your commitment to confront racism is how you act in white spaces. When you go home for Thanksgiving and Uncle Bob is talking about how Kyle Rittenhouse was defending the community from thugs and looters, how will you respond?" Yeah, I don't know if this is going to come up at my Thanksgiving, but it might come up at some of our listeners and viewers. But she offers a couple helpful suggestions. She says, start thinking about how you'll intervene now. It only gets harder in the moment. A recommendation, use I statements, like, it hurts me when you say that. Or, when I go to protests, it's often police who initiate violence. Or, I'm scared about how this verdict emboldens vigilantes. And I think if you can keep your temper and emotions in check and just convey, like she's suggesting here, how that rhetoric makes you feel, I think that could potentially go a long way.
Yeah. And of course, Jackie's bringing here the wisdom that we need. And she's absolutely right, which is, you know, comes as no surprise if you know Jackie.
Yeah. She's great. If you didn't catch our interview with her, you should go back a couple episodes.
Yep. And she's got a new book out called Fierce Love that you got to check out.
Yeah. Well,
so Dan, what are your Thanksgiving plans? Are you getting together with your conservative family?
It's a mixed bag. So we got, you know, all over the spectrum, which makes it real fun.
Well, listen, we want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving, however you're going to be celebrating it in whatever way. Hopefully the rest of this week will be a good one. Look forward to next week when Doug Padgett should be back with us, hopefully, I think.
He may be driving an RV across the country because the RV ended up in Florida and it needs to get back to California.
You know, I might go and ride with him.
You should go with him.
Yeah, we got some planning to do for 2020, so that might actually be a good opportunity for us to do it. That's a good thought. So we may or may not be back next week. We may or may not be back with our fearless leader next week. But regardless, whatever it might be, we have the opportunity to bring some common good into the world this week during the Thanksgiving holiday and the busy shopping weekend after that. So encourage everybody to do that, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye, everybody.